Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today, first, we'll talk about homelessness, and then we'll try to finish with our caller yesterday who argued that the government should not legislate morality. But first, if you only followed the media, that's where you got all your information, you might think that homelessness had ended the day that Bill Clinton was elected president. Because for the prior year, there was an onslaught of reporting in the media on the plight of the homeless intended by the networks and newspapers to get George Bush Sr. voted out of office. And apparently, by the day after the election, all the homeless people in America found jobs, health care, and housing because the rush of reporting came to a screeching halt. But really, as opposed to activists and journalists who use the homeless as political props, there are experts who really understand the problem. Denver's Step 13 stands as a contrast to other shelters, which are enablers for drug addicts. So let me ask the founder of Step 13, Bob Cote. Bob, what's wrong with the ideas of most homeless activists?
Well, most of them are, you know, they're into fundraising, not people raising.
Mm.
You know, God gives every bird its food, but he doesn't throw it in its nest.
That's right. And, Bob, thank you for coming on Bob Enyart Live. It's an honor to have you on. I don't think we've talked to you on the air in 10 years.
No, but I've known you for about 20.
Yeah, and I was involved years ago, just briefly, with another rescue mission in town. And I noticed that they tended to be enablers. There'd be professional homeless that all day long, they'd drink, do drugs, and then they'd go to get a meal, a shower, and a bed at night, and they were put out on the street the next morning to continue to be an addict.
Well, they're let in at 7 in the evening, and they're kicked out at 7 in the morning. Where do they think they're going to go? Left to their own devices, they go right back to the madness they're into, either drugs, alcohol, both.
Right.
You know, so, and it's a merry-go-round to nowhere. Until finally, after years of, you know, some of them have been in the shelter system for 10 or 15 years. Hmm. Then they get cirrhosis or pancreatitis or diabetes or emphysema, and they wind up, you know, dying on the installment plan a little each day.
So in other words, so the shelters really are killing them on the installment plan, being an enabler. It's like a guy who has a wife who covers for his alcoholism or drug abuse and
exactly.
helps.
Exactly. They say the poor babies. Well, let me. You know, and they all say they're just like your next door neighbor. Well, let me give you a little tip.
Yeah.
Come down here, you know, where we're at. I'm 23rd and Larimer there at the Triangle. Pick up a dozen of them and take them on a picnic up to Estes Park.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, you'll wind up tied up alive to a tree with your van in the chop shop in New Mexico.
Right.
They're not all altar boys.
No, that's true. But tell us, what is the difference? What do you guys do at Step 13 that's different?
Well, we challenge them. We don't coddle them. When they come in here, you know, they must be clean and sober, and we take a drug test for, you know, 12 mm-hmm. different kinds of drugs, even designer drugs, and then we take a urine screen. They have to be alcohol and drug-free, and then we give them a job. And if I can't, we have two in-house businesses, a car detailing shop and a T-shirt, and we print T-shirts, hats, bags, mouse pads, cups, hats, whatever.
All right. So a car detailing shop and a printing shop, and
yeah.
You've got these in-house.
In-house, yeah. We do very well at it. I planned them just to, you know, I didn't want to make a lot of money on it. I wanted to put people to work, see, mm-hmm. to kind of the litmus test and to teach them a trade. But it's worked out very, very well. In the year 2000, before the drought, we made almost $50,000 on the car detailing because we're two blocks from Coors Field's front gate, and we have a parking lot over here out here for 40 cars.
Right.
So,
and so how does that work? Because we might be going to a Rockies baseball game.
Well, just call ahead, and if you want to, you know, get a space or if you want a car wash or a car detail, and the number is 303-295-STEP.
All right, 303-295-STEP. And so if a guy is down and out, he's homeless, He's probably, he might be an alcoholic or a drug addict, and he comes to you guys for help. Then what happens is you're going to put him to work.
That's exactly what we're going to do. You know, work. That's one of our mottos. You know, we also trademarked the hand up, not a handout.
Right.
And real change, not spare change. And that's what, you know, it's a quality of life issue now, Bob. You know, we've
right.
given them so much change that they think they're entitled to everything. Like
right.
Skyline Park is fenced off, closed, you know, three city blocks, a beautiful park we couldn't use because, you know, you didn't dare walk down in there because you're liable not to come out.
Of the homeless. Now,
right.
you know, the Denver Post, I noticed for a long time, they would use the term homeless
yeah.
when it was an activist story and they're trying to get compassion or funding. But a crime story elsewhere in the paper,
mm-hmm.
They refer to an arsonist. They don't call him homeless there. They call him a transient.
Sure. If say that we were sitting on a curb down here, Bob, and a reporter came by and she was doing a goody-goody story, she would refer to us as homeless. The next day, if I, you know, stabbed you, they'd say one transient stabs another transient.
Right, right. Instead of one homeless guy killed another. Right, exactly.
The homeless is a spin term. The spin doctor that thought of that one was a genius because we have to start using brand names like prisonless, illegal alien, and then there are those that are
yeah.
truly, you know, down on their luck, the mentally disabled,
well,
physically disabled.
Well, can we talk about that? What are the causes? Because recently people have been saying they're going to end homelessness.
Well, I debated the professor, I can't remember his name, from University of Denver, public policy professor, and he said, we're going to end homelessness in 10 years. Now, I said, in other words, you're going to end alcoholism, drugism, domestic violence, mental disabilities. I mean, that's just a miracle. How do you plan on doing that?
Right.
Because we have a plan. And I said, well, I'd like to see it. Well, they don't have a plan. That's pie in the sky.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's just like...
Now, the ones that my heart goes out to are the people who are mentally ill. My heart goes out to them.
It's a tragedy.
And yeah,
you know,
it is.
If they had the shelter system, I had it years ago. I don't know if you remember, I had a program called PIES, and I tried to get it passed. It went through the Colorado House, and in the state senate, Chuck Berry's mother died that day, and it was defeated by one vote. But I wanted all the shelters sliced up like a pie, where you'd put all the ones with mental disabilities in sheltered numbered one, and then the alcoholics and drug addicts in two. The physically disabled in four, and then, you know, the ones that are really truly on their luck and slip through the net in four, families and single women, battered women, runaway, throwaway youth, and so on. And so you could focus on the problem. When you throw them all under one roof, what you have is a zoo.
Yeah, a zoo. And but actually, I don't think it's a good idea for the government to fund shelters anyway.
Well, no, and you know, and they're fighting the President Bush's faith-based initiative. You know, they've been fighting it tooth and nail. You can't believe. I was on a task force for the National Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, and what that is, it's the whole bill. The title of it is faith-based and community-based, but
right.
they never use community-based, and they're afraid that somebody, you know, they're all trying to get their wheel greased.
Well, obviously, liberals hate anything that has anything to do with faith, if it's Christian faith. But the Step 13, you guys don't take government money, do you?
We do not take one dime of federal, state, or city money, nor will we ever, or
right.
United Way money.
Right, but to tell you the truth, I imagine George Bush has good motives, but I don't want churches being sucked into the welfare black hole of being the middleman in welfare handouts.
Well,
because
yeah.
it'll ruin the churches.
You're absolutely right, and they'll get addicted to this federal funding like these other programs.
Right, exactly. But, okay— So, Bob, I'm trying to process this. So if somebody's an alcoholic or a drug addict
uh-huh.
and you have a shelter for them and you're going to give them a meal and a shower and a bed overnight, that's fundamentally hurting them, not helping them.
Well, sure, you're enabling them because if you don't – they all have a problem, and if that problem is alcohol and drugs, then address it and say, we're going to give you, you know, this bed and this meal, but what you're going to have to do, you're going to have to take antabuse, you're going to have to go to drug and alcohol classes, or at least make them, you know, what they could say is they could hand out like a voucher here in the city, say, shine police cars for, mm-hmm. you know, 2 hours, and we'll give you
sure.
a thing for a meal.
Right.
Or, you know, rake the leaves down at City Park or
yeah,
clean
work,
the windows. Do
work,
something.
Work works.
Well, that's right. But see, what we've done is you don't dare. You know, like these guys standing on the corner, we'll work for food, God bless.
Yeah.
Vietnam vet. I had a guy ask me one time how you spell Vietnam.
And he was a Vietnam vet.
But you could drag him off the corner, you know, to go to work, you know, with a wrecker.
Bob, for a few years, I had a sign in my trunk of my car. I always brought it with me. And it was a protest sign, a picket sign. It said, "He's a liar." And I would pull up next to somebody on a street corner saying, "We'll work for food." And I'd say, "Come on, I got a truck to unload. You can have as much food as you can carry." And they would, you know, and they'd say, "Well, I can't. I have a doctor's appointment. I whatever."
And so then, doctor's appointment, they got to go see their lawyer. They have to go over to the clinic.
Right.
You know.
So then I would protest the guy and hold my sign, "He's a liar," with an arrow pointing at him. "We'll work for food." It's not true. People feel good by giving him money to buy drugs and alcohol. So to make myself feel better, I'm going to hurt this guy because I'm so needy, I'll feel better in throwing him a buck.
That's exactly. You hit it right on the head. See, it makes them feel better, but do they look at the long-range consequences of giving that man $2? And the next guy gives him $2, and he buys a couple of bottles of Mad Dog. Then he stumbles in front of a car and gets hit and winds up staying in Denver General for 3 months. And who pays for that? We do.
Now, Bob, I quoted a Bible verse to somebody who's run a Denver homeless shelter for decades.
Uh-huh.
I interviewed him. I don't want to say who it is. His name was Del Maxfield, something like that. But anyway, the Bible verse said this. It said, it's a command. It's in the New Testament. "He who will not work shall not eat."
That's right.
"He who will not work shall not eat." It's in the New Testament. And I asked him, and this is a Christian homeless shelter, a rescue mission, and I asked him to defend his ministry based on that command. And he said, "Well, I'm not prepared to address that."
Yeah, he's, you know what he's prepared to address? He sends out more direct mail than Ed McMahon.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Think about it. They spend $3.5 million a year on advertising. Their budget is $17 million. I mean, what's going on here?
Right, right. And so if your whole life has been dedicated to homeless ministry, you're a Christian minister, and you say, "I'm not prepared to address that verse that says, 'He who will not work shall not eat.'"
Yeah, they'll always go to, you know, in the Bible it says to clothe the naked, feed the hungry, and shelter the homeless. But
yeah,
it also says, you know, he who doesn't work doesn't eat.
Right, and that the reason God says that is because if you're an enabler, you will destroy the human being.
That's right.
You'll destroy
and
the
that's
person.
That's exactly what we've done with this homeless issue throughout the country. Now, here,
right,
figures equals funding. So they say we served 300,000 last year. Well, how did you serve them? By enabling them or what?
Right.
And they're very mobile. Right now, we have an influx of people coming here from San Diego, Phoenix, Austin, and wherever, headed for the Dakotas or Minnesota or wherever. So every place they stop on the way, by the time they get from Austin to Chicago, they're counted as 1,460 homeless people by the National Coalition for the Homeless, when in reality there's only one. And they do the same game in Denver. There's 23 places you can eat. There's 23 places you can stop for clothing, bus tokens, shoes, gloves, hats, and they hit every one every day, and they're counted, you know, as 23 people, when in reality they're only one person.
Right. So
figures equals funding.
The editor of the editorial page at the Denver Post a few years back was going to profile a homeless family every week in his column.
Chuck Green,
and I challenged him. In fact, I had him on the air maybe a half a dozen times that year. And I predicted, I said, "Chuck, you'll never be able to find 52 homeless families throughout the year."
And he didn't.
And do you know, over and over, he wrote about single alcoholic guys. He wrote about one woman who owned two homes in Minnesota, and she was just traveling.
Yeah, well, yeah, Bill, you know what's funny here? They do their own cooking and cleaning and whatever. I could hire a cook, but why should I?
Yeah.
They need to take responsibility for themselves. And they'll come in and say, "What time's dinner?" And I give them a bag of food and say, "I don't care, whatever time you want to cook it." And then they
praise
leave,
the Lord,
Chuck.
Bob. Hey, Bob, we're about out of time because we had another segment scheduled. But let me get the phone number again, 303-295-STEP, S-T-E-P.
Yeah, or 7837, and we also have a website. It's www.step13, the number, just not spelled out.
Step 13.
Step13.org.
Step13.org. And so we're really going to do this. How much is a car detail? That's expensive, that stuff.
No, we charge like for a large car, like a Buick or whatever, $100. And I mean, it's done. We'll use
for a real
the
detail.
Same polish that United Airlines uses on their planes.
All right, that's a really great marketing line. And how about for a minivan?
A minivan, same price.
We have seven boys, Chuck. My wife Cheryl.
We do
Cheryl
boats
and
motorhomes, and we'll do anything.
RVs.
RVs.
Wow.
Kids' wagons, bicycles, motorcycles.
Wow. Okay, all right. Bob Cote, Step 13. Bob, I'm thrilled you're still fighting the fight. I'm glad that you're on – I'm glad that we're on the same side.
Well, listen, you ought to come down, Bob. We've got an eye clinic here now, and we're putting in a dental clinic. Mike Donovan and his wife, Debbie, have given us some funds to do that. So we're fixing people, just not feeding them.
Well, Bob, if you don't mind, right after the show, we'll call and make an appointment, and we'll get down there and say hi to you guys.
All right, Bob.
All right, appreciate it.
Keep it up.
Okay, that was Bob Cote with Step 13 in Lodo, downtown Denver, just a couple blocks from Coors Field. And if you'd like to help out and get a nice, clean car in the process, call up and have your car detailed. Wouldn't that be great? 303-295-STEP, 303-295-STEP. Just excellent. Okay, yesterday at the end of the show, we got a call from Bob and Aurora, who was making the point that the government cannot legislate morality. I think that was his point. We're going to bring him on to clarify. And I'd like to have a good conversation with Bob and figure out what should be a crime and what should not be a crime, because not all sins are crimes. If you envy someone, that's a sin, but it shouldn't be a crime. So if you covet your neighbor's wife, that should not be a crime. It's covetousness. It's lust. It's envy. But what if you seduce your neighbor's wife? For 3,500 years, at least, in all Judeo-Christian cultures, that was a crime. Adultery was a crime. And it's been decriminalized just in the last few decades. And we know that Hollywood, Hillary, the homosexuals, the humanists all agree that the crimes that were crimes for thousands of years should now be protected behavior by government. And so conservative Christians tend to be in the mix and trying to figure out, well, what should and what should not be criminal. So let's go back to Bob in Aurora. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So, Bob, we've asked to have you back on, so I want to make sure you get a fair shot at explaining your position.
Okay.
I do have a couple questions for you.
Certainly.
So how would you like to begin?
Well, I would like to begin first by making this point, and it's just a very simple one. I want you to know that we're on the same team.
I could tell from your call, Bob. I agree 100%.
I just think we may disagree on tactics.
Yeah.
And so I just want to discuss tactics. And I want you to know I'm an avid student of this. I'm a student of government economics.
All right.
I've got master's degrees. I graduated from Annapolis. I served in the Marine Corps. Type this up today or
all
yesterday
right.
when I called
and,
you.
And Bob, this is exciting to even speak with somebody like you. And to let you know, I've done a talk show now for over 12 years. I've done seminars all over the country from Honolulu to Pittsburgh on God's criminal justice system, what right. should be criminal and what is simply a sin. And not all sins, of course, are crimes. And
right.
how do we determine what behavior should be crime? And then once we figured that out, what should the punishments be?
Exactly. Okay.
So I take
That's a fair place to start.
All right. So I take it that you're a Christian.
I am a Christian.
Well, praise the Lord. That's great. let me run. You're such a nice guy. I hesitate to do this, but let me set you up with a tough question.
Okay.
My audience will know I've been saying this for 10 years.
Okay.
I've been saying that if you ask 100 Sunday school teachers what should the punishment be for perjury, you may get 100 different answers.
I agree with that.
But you'll never get what God answered in the Bible. You'll never find out what did God say should be the punishment for perjury.
Yeah.
In my experience, even Christian leaders and activists, mm-hmm. we don't even give God the courtesy. And it's easy for me to say because I've focused on this for many years now, but we don't even give God the courtesy of consulting with him to find out what's God's opinion on perjury. We're stronger on constitutional law or English common law. We might be experts on those issues, but we really don't know. In fact, we systematically dismiss whatever God says about government or law.
Okay.
So that's my question for you, and I apologize in advance, but what do you think God says? What should the punishment be for perjury?
I don't know exactly what he'll say the exact punishment would be for perjury.
All right.
But I would say that from what I see, I know that God created the earth.
Right.
And I know that God created the earth with in a manner that shows us his truth.
Amen. Absolutely true. So that law should not be created, but discovered.
Discovered.
Because the truth is objectively true.
Exactly.
Let me agree
at that point. That's
yeah,
good.
We sure do. That's neat. Let me tell you what God says in the Bible. The punishment for perjury is based on the trial.
Okay.
Whatever is at stake in the trial, whatever the potential punishment is, that's what the punishment for perjury in that case is. So if it's a trial about somebody stealing a $500 stereo,
okay,
and there's a witness who is found to be lying, then that witness has to pay the restitution for the $500.
Okay, because he's contributing to the theft.
Yeah, to that extent. Whereas if it's a murder case and a witness is lying, saying he did not commit the murder. In fact, he was with me that night. We were camping up in the mountains. Then God said that witness has effectively become an accomplice to try to get the murderer acquitted from the crime. And so in that case, then the perjury should be punished by death.
I agree.
Now, it's
perfect. I don't know if it should be punished by death, but I agree that there should be a punishment for perjury, period. Yes, and I agree. And I believe that one day God will hold me in court. In his own court,
yeah,
and he will punish me and treat me how he may.
Well, if
based off of his judgment and off of his law, which to a significant degree is revealed in the Bible, I think.
Yeah, well, Christians basically most Christians believe that Jesus Christ took our punishment on the cross when he was crucified,
right.
And so if we trust in him, God will say that, because you trusted in my son, I will forgive you.
Okay.
Bob, here's the point I'm making. Christian activists who are trying to change government and have a passion for what's right and wrong in society, we systematically do not know what God said about laws, punishment, trials, judges. We don't know about government. What principles of government has God laid out in the Bible? We don't know. It's like we don't care enough about God even to check with him.
Yeah.
So you called in saying that, let's take adultery as an example.
Yeah.
Right? I believe that God makes it crystal clear in the Bible that adultery is not only a sin, like coveting your neighbor's wife is a sin.
Yeah.
But if you go so far as to attempt to seduce your neighbor's wife, well, for 3,500 years, that's been a crime. And in Colorado, if you look up adultery in our Colorado revised statutes, you'll find it. And what they did was they gutted the punishment, so there's no longer a punishment, but it's still on the books.
Okay. I would say there is a punishment. I would just say that the punishment isn't coming from our judicial system.
Well, but it what? For how long? Am I wrong in saying that?
No, you're not wrong that there used to be laws. I'm just saying the removal of those laws, I don't think, removes that there is a natural consequence for adultery that God has given the individual that shows him the truth of the failure of an adulterous life.
That's a great point. But God said, do not murder, do not steal, do not commit adultery, don't commit perjury. Those are four of the Ten Commandments.
I think he meant it. And that's why he built the world in a way to show us that when we do that, life falls apart and we start failing.
Yeah, so I don't know if you've thought this through in this way, but thou shalt not steal is violated by socialism and welfare.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, so we have decriminalized.
And it has shown itself systematically in societies that those societies that adopt that, regardless of a law that forces one or the other, that the natural creation of the earth, societies to their knees.
Right, exactly right.
the failure of that approach to living.
Right. Socialism is a way to produce widespread poverty. So is communism.
Okay,
so, so we decriminalize stealing, thou shall not steal, through our welfare programs. And thou shall not murder, we decriminalize murder by legalizing the killing of unborn children and little by little euthanasia, sick, unloved, old, unwanted elderly people. And we have effectively decriminalized perjury. God said, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. That's one of the Ten Commandments. That's perjury. And in America, for the most part, perjurers are not prosecuted, charged or prosecuted.
All right. Now, can I
go ahead.
Can I try this?
Yeah.
Perjury, murder, and evil programs, something in common.
Yeah.
All of the actions taken of.
Okay. All right.
The murderer.
Yeah.
The government who robs Peter to pay Paul, okay, through their social welfare programs and socialism.
Right. They're okay? Clear victims.
And the perjurer who removes the truth from a situation that allows someone else to steal from someone or harm someone or destroy their property, okay?
Right.
All of those have direct impact on from one individual to another, imposing their life on someone else, removing their freedom,
all right.
Their private property.
All right, okay. I understand your point. You made it yesterday, though. It was real brief. If there's no immediate victim, then the behavior should be legal. But I want
For instance, pornography. Let me give you an example on pornography.
Bob, I get the point really well. I got it when you made it yesterday.
Sure, the viewer does. The listener does.
Well, they should. You're saying if there's a victimless crime, it should be legal. And we have the smartest audience in the country, so they get it.
Okay.
And we're going to run out of time in 2 minutes. Okay, so here's what I want you to consider.
Okay.
The four H's agree with you. Hillary, the humanist, Hollywood, and homosexuals.
They totally disagree with me.
No, they agree that these things should not be criminalized.
Pornography,
adultery. On that point, Bob, please.
They think that homosexuality should be subsidized.
Bob, please. Bob, on that one narrow point, they agree with you. And let me tell you. Right.
Okay.
And let me tell you who disagrees with you. Moses
disagrees with me.
Moses, through the prophets, Jesus Christ, the apostles, and all of Judeo-Christian history until the last few decades, they've held that these things should be crimes. And for example, I could quote you from the New Testament, the Apostle Paul, in 1 Timothy 1. He said that the law, he was talking about how to use the law properly.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we know that the law is good if you use it lawfully. Knowing this, that the law was made for murderers, for kidnappers, for perjurers, mm-hmm. for fornicators, for sodomites.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you, what you're doing is then you decriminalize adultery,
mm-hmm.
and what we end up with is a 50% divorce rate. And if you don't think there are not victims to that, because millions of kids grow up with their hearts ripped out of their chest because we no longer have the solid foundation of marriage, because we have protected with the force of government, we've protected men who try to seduce their neighbors' wives.
Okay, can I, and then I'll make a point and you.
This is it. This is the end of the show.
The end of the show is this.
Last point. Go ahead, make
if
the
last. If you think that you can control every sin to prevent any from experiencing the consequence of sin,
did I say that?
Setting up a society that will fall as much as socialism does.
Hey, Bob, did I say every sin, or did I say we should do what we did for 3,500 years, what our American founders did, that adultery was
removed a theocracy. They removed it.
You're wrong.
It failed.
You're wrong. England didn't have a theocracy.
You're wrong.
We're out of time. If you want to do this again, we'll do it again. All right, this is Bob Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.